Right, I think we're live. Namaste and welcome to the Bharat Varta Weekly. I'm Roshan Karyapa. I have with me Abhishek Paul and Nirav Kanodra here to take you through the news and events of the week that was. Well, plenty of things happened. I mean, we're going to talk about, of course, the Ganesh Chaturthi celebrations across the country, the government placing an order for 66 crore doses of Covishield, updates on the BRICS summit that happened, the sudden resignation of Gujarat Chief Minister Mr. Vijay Rupani, and of course, the India-England test match being cancelled. This was also the week where it was the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center. So Abhishek, Nirav, any memories? What were you guys doing when it happened? Abhishek?
Yeah, so I was in Kolkata those days, and for some reason I had turned on the TV sometime around 7 or 8 in the evening, and then obviously like everyone else sat and watched with horror what was happening. Kind of one of those unforgettable evenings in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember just being out on the road and people just coming out of their houses saying, what the hell is happening, right? I remember a few of our friends gathered outside of our houses talking about it. It's just crazy scenes. Yeah, Nirav.
Yeah, no, similar. So when I think on one of the TV news channels, they suddenly showed it. First, I refused to believe that it had happened. I thought it's like some promo for a upcoming Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of time for it to sink in. And this kind of like changed flying, changed airport security, all of that forever, right? So definitely these images are like lasting. Like people started saying, oh, do you want to go like abroad for a master's or whatever? Those kind of conversations are happening immediately. Mm. But yeah, that moment is unforgettable. And like 20 years later, we've got Taliban back in power. Little seems to be have changed in Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, it's such an insane moment, right, in history. I mean, I remember George Bush's comment also, right? Something like, we'll smoke him out or something. Well, anyway, so we put out a couple of very interesting episodes last week, one on the COVID-19 vaccination. Dr. Yogesh Panchwag is, of course, on the front lines. They've administered something like 170,000 doses since March. And he took us through, the various nuances of really what is happening on the ground. How are we able to, do 1 crore vaccinations a day? The different agencies coming together, the role of technology and so on and so forth. It was a fascinating episode. And of course, I mean, we did a very fun episode, fun for me, of course, episode with Rajiv Mantri and Nimish Joshi on everything that's happening in the startup ecosystem right now. We did an episode earlier, and this was sort of a logical follow-up to that, where a lot of the startups that we spoke about then are now, filing for IPO, right? And they're filing for IPO in India, no less. So yeah, two very interesting episodes. Do check it out if you haven't already. So let's move on to the first piece of news. Obviously, Ganesh Chaturthi being celebrated across the country on Friday, one of the most popular festivals. In this sort of a doom and gloom sort of a situation, I think this signaled a sort of a recovery from that, right? Also, do check out the episode we did last year with Amit Paranjpe and Vivek Khaitan on the history and significance of Ganesh Chaturthi itself. A lot of fascinating anecdotes. So, Nirav, how are your celebrations in Singapore?
So, here actually in Singapore, for me personally, there's an Indian school which has a Ganpati Pandal, where obviously due to COVID restrictions, all those things apply. But similarly, as in Ganesh Chaturthi, like as you mentioned, like the history has already been discussed and Bharat Varta, but it was one form where all community got together. And prior to like 1892, it was more of a personal affair where people got a Ganpati idol in their own house, with Lokmanya Tilak popularizing it in his newspaper Kesari. So the Sarvajanik Mandals, and it got community together, played a very big part in Indian freedom struggle. I think what has happened over the last few years pre-COVID was some of these pandals started becoming like bigger and grander, and there was a lot of competition, and maybe some of them actually lost the original purpose of what it was meant to be, playing like loud Bollywood music, etc. Now, like unfortunately due to COVID, like the state of Maharashtra has put in a lot of restrictions. People are using technology to have like online darshan and like aartis. People participate via like Zoom meeting. Also, in terms of immersion of idols, I think that was like a very big issue, where idols were made out of plaster of Paris and non-biodegradable, and they would float back from the sea. I think now with a little more focus, where people are saying that immersion can be done in a small tank, or you have smaller size of idols. So I think some of these changes which are being brought about by COVID, probably they will kind of be a part of society as well. Maybe instead of having too many huge pandals, It'll become a smaller affair, but more focus on like community gathering together. So let us see. I think hopefully this is the last one with COVID restrictions. Next year, it should be one without. So yeah, fingers crossed. And as Lord Ganesha is always mentioned at the start of good things, hopefully we are on our way of exit from COVID.
Yeah, rumor of obstacles, and we need him now more than ever. All right, moving on. The central government has placed an order for 66 crore doses of Covishield. This order is to be supplied by December, in line with the 20 crore doses per month manufacturing capacity of Serum Institute. On August 31st, as the cumulative COVID-19 vaccine doses administered in the country crossed the 65 crore mark, out of which SII alone had supplied more than 60 crore doses. So Abhishek, pretty important movement on this, right?
Yeah, so I mean, as you said, on August, we were at 65 crores. I think by yesterday, we were close to 74 crores, as I was checking. Progress is happening quite smoothly as of now in terms of daily and weekly vaccinations. And Covishield, of course, Serum's Covishield is providing like more than 80-85% of the total vaccines that are being administered in India, right? So Bharat Biotech, unfortunately, has not been able to ramp up as much as expected. And the supply of Sputnik also is very little. So we are primarily dependent on Covishield. And it's good that the government has ordered 66 crore doses more. I think the monthly capacity is, as you said, around 20 crores now for Serum Institute for Covishield. Going forward, a lot more people would be getting their second doses. That sort of vaccination part of it will happen pretty smoothly, because I guess people who have taken one will not have a problem taking the second dose. We'll soon be probably reaching those numbers who are kind of okay with the vaccine, right? And then the next challenge will come in terms of convincing people who are still hesitant, right? So the progress of first doses from maybe, let's say, November, December onwards will get a little slow, right? Because then only the hesitant population will be remaining, while the second dose part will continue sort of smoothly. So interesting to see, as your guest as well mentioned, right? Removing hesitancy now for the, let's say, the last 20% of the population will be a big challenge. Also, interestingly, the PM had a meeting on the COVID response and preparedness for the so-called third wave, which could come, right? A lot of lessons would have been taken in terms of what happened in the second wave. And the festive season, which has now started, is also something for authorities to keep a close watch on in terms of how the cases develop.
All right. In an unexpected political development, the Gujarat Chief Minister, Mr. Vijay Rupani, has handed in his resignation. His resignation came a year ahead of assembly elections in the state. The former Chief Minister also did not answer any questions pertaining to why he left. He's the third BJP Chief Minister to step down in recent months after B.S. Yedurappa in Karnataka and Tirath Singh Rawat in Uttarakhand. Nirav, so what is really happening here?
Since there's been no official communication on the reason, one can only speculate like why Rupani has resigned. But there was always a little bit of murmur against his leadership in handling the second wave of COVID. Also, I think Rupani is a little more soft-spoken personality. That's, I think, a personality trait, which probably didn't go down as well, where a lot of other politicians were over communicating. He was a little bit quieter. Whatever the reasoning may be, I think what this shows is probably BJP has people listening to people on the ground. If there is some kind of dissatisfaction, they've taken step to make the CM take responsibility and he has stepped down. So in other states, it's different reasons. But here, for this reason, probably Pani has handed in his resignation. So what happens is that before the election next year, the anti-incumbency factor doesn't come into play. So if you're dissatisfied with this PM, you're saying, okay, this feedback has been taken, some replacement has been done, and they'll project a new face. Exactly about 5 years ago, a little over 5 years ago, Rupani replaced Anandiben Patel as CM a year before the previous election in 2017. So in 2016, he's completed his 5-year term. In Gujarati, there's a saying, Pani Pella Paad Bandhvi. So that means that you build the dam before the flood, before the monsoons come in, right? So probably they're doing that. There are a lot of people in contention who will be the next CM. They will take into account all sorts of things. One of them probably is Health Minister Mansukh Mandavia, though I would think it's unlikely, given he's just become the health minister. There are a couple of other names floating around. There is Nitin Patel, C.R. Patel, Gordhan Zadafia. Let us see what turns up. But this is, I would say, in politics, all these things happen. You see the party thinking what is it that's the best decision with an eye to remain in power and win the upcoming next election?
Yeah, I think they've been extremely proactive in all of the states, right, on that front. All right, the Prime Minister chaired the 13th BRICS summit. He spoke about Afghanistan, COVID, and more. Some of the highlights of the summit included the BRICS counter-terrorism action plan, collaboration to fight against the pandemic, and also talks of political partnerships. The leaders also expressed concerns over the latest developments in Afghanistan and called for refraining from violence and settling the situation by peaceful means. Abhishek, what do you make of the summit?
Yeah, so another summit held digitally. So it seems Afghanistan was obviously a major focus area and talked about a lot during this BRICS summit. The tone and tenor of the statements that have come out are obviously much more grim this year compared to last year, right? So last year, they were talking about a more hopeful future for Afghanistan and all that. This year, the concern seems to be to sort of focus on the fallout of the Taliban takeover, right? So in terms of, the countries expressed that no terror threat should emanate from the soil of Afghanistan, right? I think Russia was the only country which sort of put a finger on the United States and sort of blamed them for their actions in Afghanistan. The others were probably more circumspect. Apart from Afghanistan, as you said, I think COVID response was the other important part coming out from the BRICS summit. So I think China made a particular statement in terms of how they will strengthen global cooperation in the health sector. And also they made some commitment of further donation of vaccines to developing countries. So yeah, interesting stuff. But in general, I think the BRICS, at least in my opinion, the BRICS sort of forum is not a very, very relevant forum because each of these countries has a very, very different outlook and position right now. Even though there was some economic and maybe demographic commonality a few years back, I think all these countries have taken a fairly different path forward. And so I'm not very sure in terms of how relevant this forum is.
The American automaker Ford has announced that it will exit India. The company will end manufacturing operations in India and close their plants at Sanand and Chennai. They've reported a loss of $2 billion over 10 years. Approximately 4,000 employees are expected to be affected by the restructuring. And Ford India will also work with dealerships to transition them from sales to service. Nirav, why do you think this happened? I mean, Ford hasn't been doing well in India for a while now, right? But this decision to exit has come after 10 years.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of factors in play. So one is that the Indian car market is predominantly a small car market, and Ford being an American company, their range is like mid-size sedans and higher. One is like the market fit. Two is in terms of like getting market share. You have like dominant players like Maruti, Tata and Mahindra on the higher end. Hyundai is one company which has gotten in and has done very well with the smaller car segment. You also have Toyota and Honda in the mid-size sedan segment, which are competing with Ford. I think, it's an issue about like getting the business model right, getting the conditions right. Ford also expected India to sign some FTAs, free trade agreements with the European Union or like UK, where they could possibly manufacturing in India and sell overseas. Those haven't come through as well. Despite this, it's a business decision. They tried to enter India, did not get a foothold either locally or keep it as a manufacturing hub. But I think it's important for them to be able to exit easily. Also, 4,000 employees affected, probably about 500 will still be there manufacturing spare parts for the existing customers here as well as some for export. And when anyone sees that a company could shut its operations down and exit without like a much higher additional cost, it actually enables other companies to be more comfortable setting up new plant. Any business is a risky venture. Sometimes the risk pays off, sometimes it doesn't. And we need to think about like creative destruction. Sanand is an automobile hub as well as Chennai. And hopefully all the workers get their skilled labor, they get re-employed by other companies. Hopefully the transition isn't too bad for them. But otherwise, I think it's a business decision. They've lost $2 billion. You have to call a stop somewhere. And you should respect that decision. I think if anything, our legal framework should make it smoother and not throw in more spanners in the work for them to exit. This is a very strong signal. Just like the bankruptcy code is a strong signal that please do take risk, do invest in business. If it doesn't go well, things are not that bad. That is what it is. And it also gives an idea about that the Indian car market is also like a small car market. The advent of Uber, Ola and other ride sharing platforms, a lot of car purchases have been delayed, or the life cycle for upgrading a car has been delayed. Like one single car, when it is bought for personal use, is parked maybe 22, 23 hours a day. Whereas like a Ola or Uber car is operating 15 to 16 hours a day, right? So there is more utilization per unit car produced. So that's also a thing. And unfortunately, like Ford couldn't manage to crack the market. Hopefully, India does finally have a free trade agreement with the UK and with the EU. Other manufacturers can export spare parts or export cars. And maybe, who knows, Ford and earlier GM, who had left, reverse their decisions and choose to invest again.
Yeah. Do you attribute anything to any macroeconomic conditions at all?
No, I don't think... it's so much so about like macroeconomic conditions. Indian car sales came out recently after like the big plunge in COVID. Those numbers look good again. India is a very large two-wheeler market, and for cars, predominantly small cars and some SUVs. It's just a product market fit. SUVs are dominated by Mahindra and Tata's. Small cars are dominated by Maruti and Hyundai. And sometimes what happens is a lot of these car companies are also locking in the customers where they upgrade their car, they buy back the old car and sell them like a new car. So it is difficult to put a toehold in the market. And you've seen that. So Ford will still be selling cars through their dealer network, but they will be like completely knocked down units and reassembled. So I think 500 employees still will be retained, but probably about 4,000 employees might lose their jobs.
All right, moving on. In some interesting news, the central government has approved a plan for 6 more eyes in the sky. This project, conducted in collaboration with DRDO, has cleared a budget of 11,000 crores. They will take 6 aircraft from Air India and fit them with airborne early warning and control systems. Abhishek, this looks pretty interesting. What is the significance of this?
Yes, so basically what is going to happen is, as you said, 6 passenger aircrafts, which are basically manufactured by Airbus, they are being taken over by the armed forces, and then an RFP will come out, which will basically be for modifying these aircraft. And once these aircrafts are modified and made fit to purpose, then these DRDO manufactured radars, right, will be fit onto these aircrafts, and then they will become these eyes in the sky, as you say. Now, in terms of significance, so I was just going through an article in the print, and there they talk about how the criticality of these aircrafts, right, were felt during the India-Pakistan sort of aerial duel, which happened in 2019. Now, it seems Pakistan has a large number of such early warning aircrafts with them. And they took advantage of some gaps in the Indian side during that. So it seems like this is a sort of important gap to fill for the Indian Air Force. And it's good that the radar system will be a homemade one by DRDO.
Yeah. So apparently the AEW and C can detect and track all flying objects in the sky, including incoming fighters, cruise missiles, yeah, drones, and so on. Yeah. All right. In a rather disappointing end to a series, the 5th test match between India and England was cancelled. The England and Wales Cricket Board said in a statement that it is cancelled due to fears of an increase in the number of COVID cases at the Indian camp. India were leading the 5-match series 2-1 after a thumping victory at the Oval, where they won the match by 157 runs. However, 3 members of their support staff, including head coach Ravi Shastri, had tested positive for COVID. Nirav, rather disappointing end to a series. Was really looking forward to the 5th test, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's quite disappointing. I think looking at the previous 4 test matches and with full stadiums, it really felt nice that, like, you know, England has come out of COVID, and all the steps that they've taken, So you felt nice, but like unfortunate that Ravi Shastri and the physio and another support staff, they were down with COVID despite being vaccinated. So there are some breakthrough infections as well. Meanwhile, a lot of people are complaining that this is due to the IPL, which starts in a week's time, and Dubai has imposed, UAE has imposed a 6-day quarantine for people coming from the UK due to the rise in COVID cases there. So not so sure. I think given that the safety of all players, as well as like mental health concerns, where if players are always concerned about their safety, they would not be performing at peak potential. This may be like the right decision. India was willing to probably forfeit the game without a ball being bowled, but I think saner heads have prevailed, and there will be one match next summer in England when India-England ODI series is to be played. So in addition to that, one test will be carried forward, and the series will be a 5-match series played over 2 years. You have the next IPL coming up from next week, and then after that's till 15th of October. And then from there till 15th of November in UAE, you have the World T20. So I think the fans will have a lot to watch, despite the unfortunate thing that this series got cancelled. There has been a lot of questions about commitment to Test cricket, or like commitment to England and Wales Cricket Board. But I don't think that is the case. It is what was like the safe or the prudent thing to do has been done. And the next match will be rescheduled. It'll probably even be better for England. They are missing a couple of star players, Jofra Archer and Ben Stokes, due to injury. And they will be back. Maybe we'll see a full strength England team. So, fingers crossed, everything moves fine.
Yeah. No, it must really take a toll on people's mental, mental health as well, right? Being in a bubble for so long. Abhishek, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, bit unfortunate, right? We were all looking forward to see and actually convincingly win the series, maybe 3-1, right? Obviously, health has to take precedence over any other thing. And I'm not very sure, the IPL plays a factor so much so that they could not delay this series by, let's say, 3-4 days. Had the IPL not been there, that could have happened, but that's about it. It's not like just because the IPL was there that people were pulling out. The concerns were real, right? Because the physio who got tested positive would have been in very close contact with most of the players. So their concerns were pretty valid.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So that's an end to this weekly. We have some stellar episodes coming up, guys. So we have Battles of the Maratha Empire with author Anish Gokhale. This was hosted by another author that was on the episode, was on the podcast earlier, Ms. Ami Ganatra. That's a fascinating, fascinating episode for all history buffs. We also have a series in collaboration with Velina Chakarova, who you've heard on a podcast earlier discussing the role of US, right? So we're producing a series with Velina called Velina Talks. In this first edition, she spoke to Hizbullah Khan, who is a journalist in Afghanistan, right? And again, with everything that's happening there, it's going to be a very interesting episode for you. And of course, the big one, Sir Geoffrey himself, Sir Geoffrey Archer, who is perhaps, the world's, maybe the top 5 best-selling authors of the current era, right? So we'll be hosting him in collaboration with our friends at CFOC. Do check it out. And if you have questions for him as well, please shoot this to our social handles on Facebook and Twitter. We'll take it up. Abhishek, Nirav, anything in particular that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I have definitely read books by Geoffrey Archer, so will be fascinating. So I was also looking forward to the episode on with the journalist in Afghanistan, right? Because it's all the things that we hear are basically through mostly through Western media lens, right?
Yeah.
So someone from there giving a perspective will be great.
Yeah. What about you, Nirav?
Yeah, so absolutely. Both of these episodes sound fantastic. I think the Battle of Maratha Empire, I think, is also what Bharat Vartha is doing, what you all have done even with Dr. Uday Kulkarni, as well as like with Anish Gokhale, is a lot of Indians don't know our own history. And a lot of people believe that after the Mughal Empire, the British rule started and we miss out the whole Maratha century. So these battles of the Maratha Empire, including the battles of Panipat against the British, where the Marathas even lost. I think if all of these are covered, I think that's a good way to kind of like spread awareness and also helps these authors popularize their books as well. So that is going to be interesting. Sir Geoffrey Archer has had like, not just he's a master storyteller, he's had a very interesting personal journey as well. Having been to prison and then out and being knighted. So I think that is like very, very interesting. Given his books convey that he's a great storyteller, I think just listening to him would be like absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of interesting content coming up next week. Do check it out. Again, thank you so much for joining us, folks. I mean, you make our Sunday mornings, I suppose, right? I can speak for all of us. So thank you again and wish you a wonderful week ahead. Stay safe, take care, and see you on the next weekly.